It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski will visit with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Underwriting for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development and Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments. More at facebook.com/NWMORCOG. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration and the developments throughout our region. And please know there's much to celebrate regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV KRNW, trust you had a great February and, like you, are enjoying the signs of spring blossoming all around us. I am so pleased to welcome you to the March 2014 edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. Segment one features the community, merchants, and arts and entertainment of Brownville, Nebraska, with guests Jan Chisholm Wright, Ron Heskett, and Tom Rudloff. In segment two, we feature Northwest Missouri State University's Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, Dr. Mike Steiner. He'll discuss the importance of general education. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Jan Chisholm Wright, Ron Heskett, and Tom Rudloff from Brownville, Nebraska, to All Things Northwest. Jan Chisholm Wright moved to Nebraska 16 years ago from Houston, Texas, and she discovered a new cultural home in Brownville. She volunteers for so many organizations, for example, the Brownville Fine Arts Association, Brownville Concert Series, the Brownville Historical Society, and the Brownville Village Theater. Ron Heskett is a fifth-generation farmer from Nemaha, Nebraska. After graduating from the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, he spent the next 30 years farming the traditional cash crop of corn and also the cash crop of soybeans. But he was always interested in alternative crops, and in order to diversify, he planted 640 grapevines in 2000. You'll hear his story about what happened after 2000 here in just a few moments. We'll also visit with Tom Rudloff, who resides in Brownville but has lived in Sioux City, Los Angeles, Omaha, Kirkwood, and DeSoto, obviously in Missouri, but also over in Wisconsin. Mr. Rudloff, along with his sister, owns a bookstore and also the Bill Farmer Gallery in Brownville. Jan, Ron, and Tom, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Thank you. Equally
Thank
excited.
You.
All right. Well, Jan, I'll start with you. I mean, we could talk nonprofits and your move 16 years ago from Houston. And, you know, before we were going on the air here, you're talking about how excited you are to be in this area. But how do all these nonprofits come about in such a small town? I mean, you're a volunteer for everything, but what's the makeup and how does this all come about?
Well, it's funny you ask that because we're a small town of about 148 people, but it's a historic town right on the Missouri River, and that has a little magic all its own. And it's been kind of a bedroom community or a weekend getaway for people from Lincoln or Omaha, and it's had a lot of artists, for instance, Tom Palmerton, who's a famous Midwest artist whose work is in a lot of galleries, who loved Brownville. Ted Kooser was poet laureate from Nebraska, poet laureate of the United States, loved Brownville. There's just some sort of allure to the place, and beautifully set in the hills, lovely historic homes, and just attracted people who had a passion about things and could get something done, get something started, see some results of their labors and share their passion with other people.
Well, interestingly, Jan, our KXCV KRNW public radio listeners know Brownville, Nebraska, and I talk with our listeners, and they're just in love with all that it has to offer. But you talk about an allure. So how did you, 16 years ago, I mean, how did you pick out Brownville from Houston, Texas.
Well, actually, I moved up here in a brother-in-law deal. My brother-in-law was from this area and had some farms, and we were looking for a place to retire to in the country, and they talked me into a 100-year-old farmhouse on a 150-acre farm next to a 3,000-acre state park. How bad can it be?
Wow, not bad, not bad.
But then we discovered Brownville. We had absolutely no idea really what we were getting into. And the first thing we did is we went to the Brownville concert series and saw Ann Hampton Calloway, who had just finished recording a CD with Wynton Marsalis, a tribute to Ella Fitzgerald. And Dave and I are sitting there going, oh, my God, pinch me.
Beautiful.
I can't believe this. And that was it. We were hooked.
You were hooked, and you're there now many, many years later. We'll talk about some of the nonprofits in a moment. Let me turn to Ron. And, Ron, you know, your story is unique and, you know, certainly history of farming, et cetera, then all of a sudden grapes and then all of a sudden a winery. And we can talk about the winery as we go throughout the program, et cetera. But kind of talk about your progression from farming to all of a sudden waking up and saying, I might think about a winery here.
Well, I like to tell people, you know, I'm still involved with agriculture. It's just a different form now. I can do it on a lot smaller acreage. Like I say, we planted a few grapes in 2000 just as an alternative crop, see how they would do. Then Bob Curtwright came along, built a winery in 2002, started helping him out part-time, and also 2002 is when we started expanding our vineyard because of the winery there. One day he wanted to know if I wanted to be the winemaker, so took a two-day course, read some books, and kind of away we went. And the rest is kind of history.
I need to pause on that. What? You read a book and two-day course? Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I could do that.
Well, a lot of that, you know, winemaking is very basic. It's a matter of paying attention to details and taking good notes as you go along. And, you know, initially we had small batches to begin with, so we kind of learned as we went. And so at the point now we're making pretty good-sized batches of wine, so.
But you expanded, obviously, throughout the years and then took over the operation, what, maybe 5 or 6 years ago,
well,
is that right?
Well, Bob passed away in the end of June in 2007. I stayed on, kept things running for the family. And then my wife, Sherry, and I purchased the business in January of 2012.
Okay. So, you know, a lot going on so far in Brownville, Nebraska. And then I'll turn it to Tom and kind of introduce you to our listeners. Tom, you know, you can talk about the bookstore and what's going on there, but obviously with your experiences across so many cities and so many states, how did you land in Nebraska, in Brownville, and kind of compare that to, you know, all the different locations that you've lived in?
Well, as I said before, the miking, I've always been a Nebraskan. We lived in Sioux City when I was born, and I was born on accident in Omaha. But both families had their heritage out of Omaha. I mean, my mother's and my father's family.
Sure. Okay.
And, you know, L.A. was a misadventure that only lasted a couple of years. And the reason for the Missouri experience was I went into a Catholic seminary, a high school seminary, and was there for 12 years. It took that long for it to get me out of high school. And then when I left the seminary, I went back to Omaha and went into Creighton University for a master's degree in history, which I failed to do, but nonetheless. And then I moved to Europe, and I came back, and as a good capitalist, I worked hard, and I thought, well, no, that's not the scenario. What happened was my sister and I went to a book sale down at Duchenne College and decided that we had to see the books on another day. There were just too many of them. And good Mother McMenemy, the librarian, said, no, this is the last day. And I says, well, how can I see the rest of the books? And she said, well, why don't you take them and sell them for us? So we had a three-month garage sale of books at my mother's house and filled a couple neighbors' barns, or not barns, but what do you call those? Oh, yeah, garages. And see, I'm adapting myself to Brownville in a lot of different
ways.
And when we tried to sell the remainder of the Duchenne collection, the guy said, no, I'm getting out of the business. Why don't you buy my business? So that was it.
Wow, that's beautiful. Obviously, a lifelong learning kind of topic, and we talk about that with our students a lot, about being lifelong learners. And, you know, obviously, you're all proof to going down different paths, living across different areas, coming now down into the Nebraska area and saying, wow, Brownville offers something pretty darn special. Jan, you mentioned a couple of those special items before, but you know, the Brownville Concert Series, for example, kind of talk about some of the talent. You've already referenced a little bit, but, you know, as our listeners think about spring, summer, fall planning for this year, the following year, et cetera, you know, talk about that concert series a little bit for us.
Oh, we've got a fabulous season going this year. It kicks off in March with the Rumbles doing a 50-year perspective of rock and roll, and they've lived it. So we get it straight from the horse's mouth. And then in April, which is really exciting, we have a young man, singer, pianist, movie actor, smoking good looking. Yeah, I mean, he does it all. And he's doing one night standards. I love the play on words. Jazzy American songbook, and it's going to be fabulous. And this is his first time visit to Brownville, and he's excited about it.
Wow.
And then we've got bluegrass coming. They're making waves in that genre. We've got a jazz Book of Gaia with Angela Hagenbach, who's extremely popular in Kansas City, has quite a following, and two other fabulous female vocalists. We have a Russian pianist coming who's on the faculty of the Royal Academy of Music in London, whose Rachmaninoff preludes are ranked up there with Arthur Rubinstein and Andre Previn. I mean, these are not shabby people that we have coming through here.
That's an unbelievable lineup, and just the beginning, obviously, of really a year-long kind of series of offerings.
Exactly. The quality just blows me away. And it's something that is very important to the series, bringing top-notch national and internationally known talent to basically rural, musically underserved communities for low ticket prices. It'd be twice as much in Lincoln or Omaha. And we also require all our performers to do a student outreach or community outreach activity. And that's just very important. That's our mission, and that's why we do this.
What a real neat opportunity for all of our listeners and all those that might want to bring some guests to the area. Also, you referenced the Summer Rep Theater in Brownville. Maybe talk about that as well.
Oh, the Brownville Village Theater is just wonderful. In fact, we've had students from your college,
so
too.
So I know, you bet.
And they get students from all over the Midwest who come for the summer, and they do everything. They act in the plays. They build the sets. They sew the costumes. They do wonderful choreography, and it's just the most charming. It's mid-June through mid-August. They run five plays every year, and you could actually come for one long weekend and see a play Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday matinee, Saturday night, Sunday matinee. You could see all the plays on one weekend.
So five different plays, obviously.
Five different plays. It just rotates like that. And I don't know how they can keep that straight. But they are fabulous. They are fabulous. I used to have season tickets to the Alley Theater in Houston. And these are just every bit as enjoyable.
Well, having attended that before, there's no question about that. And I encourage our listeners to partake in whatever really piques your interest, and whether it be music and 50-year retrospective of rock and roll or jazz or some summer rep theater, so many good things. And then, of course, you can go and try some different grapes and so on. And so, Ron, talk a little bit more about the winery itself. I mean, you've talked about the creation of it, but talk about, you know, how did you become involved beyond that two-day course?
Yeah.
How did you become involved with the winery? And then kind of where's it at today and where's it headed in the future?
I started out just kind of a part-time basis there and went full-time in 2004. That's when I exited my regular farming enterprise. And then, as you know, our wines have grown over the year. We've taken the wines to several of the international competitions around, won awards with several of the different wines. Right now we're making, I think, roughly 18 different wines out of the varieties that we're doing. We're growing about 12 different varieties on our farm, which is about 5 miles southwest of the winery, which is about as far as ways as we get the grapes. There's a small vineyard about 2 miles west and a small vineyard about a mile north of the winery. So all of our grapes are grown locally. So, you know, that kind of what helps make our wines unique because of this nutrients the minerals and everything that the grapes are pulling out of the soil itself. We've got the deep lust soils that are ideal for growing grapes in our area.
So talk about some of the wines. I mean, you got 18 varieties, but talk about some.
We run the full gamut. We've got red and white wines. We run from dry to sweet, so we've got something there that we can pretty well match anybody that walks in the doors. We can find a wine that will suit their palate.
If I know of some individuals that would want to come over and tour the winery and partake and so on, what would I do to get them to come over there? I mean, hours of operation, and what would we see when we come over there at 7?
Okay, we're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays. That's my weekend. That's when I'm working my vineyard and get my other things done. Then we're Wednesday through Saturday, we're open from 10 to 5, and Sundays 1 to 5. And then when we get into the summer hours, May through October, we stay open until 6 o'clock on Fridays and Saturday nights.
And would I assume wine sampling?
We do wine tastings anytime that we're open.
Okay, and yes. Then tours of the...
If we have enough staff on hand, we'll give tours of the cave, the brewery cave that's there. That was the main reason that Bob Curtwright chose the Brownville site to build the winery. There's caves there that were built back in 1866 for one of the first breweries in Nebraska. So that's where they stored the beer barrels. Our retail shop and entertainment center is a peg barn. It was built in 1904. They moved it from about 12 miles southwest to the winery in October of 2001 when they started putting the winery together.
Very interesting. I want to come back in a few minutes and really talk about special events that you have, but also just about the process. You talk about the process being fairly simple, but I think for some of us that haven't been involved, listeners, et cetera, that, you know, just kind of give us a sense of that. But before I come back to that, talk to Tom a little bit about your bookstore and the whole focus on the physical book form. We know that there's so much technology there out in the world right now, but talk about what your bookstore offers today and the importance of the physical books for all of us to go and enjoy.
Well, I think that the physical book, aside from the kind of cliche version of I like the feel of it, well, I do too, but as often as not, it's poking me in the ribs in the morning, you know, but I don't think that that's enough to introduce people to the whole culture of the paper book. And I'm afraid, probably without reason, that the new electronic book is going to raise possibly a whole generation that have never felt a book, but that's probably alarmist. I don't know. But there's more than just the feel of it. I think that there is also, not unlike what is talked about, that television actually makes your mind flaccid, you know, that maybe the electronic book might have some aspect there. But that's for science to determine, you know. In the meanwhile, I just think that it's a lot of fun, and I think there's enough people that feel that way, too, that even though our business has fallen off tremendously, you know, it's a retirement game for me now, so. Sure. We're closed most of the winter just because we really can't afford the heat. But there's not that many people coming anyway. But during the summertime, we're open just about 20 hours a day.
And pretty much pretty wide range of subjects and books, I assume?
Yeah, we do everything from paperbacks to rare books. And not to say some paperbacks, I have a copy of Kurt Vonnegut's Canary in a Cowhouse, for instance, for $250, and it was never put into a hardbound form. So.
Interesting. And in addition to that, though, you've got the Bill Farmer Gallery, so kind of talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, Bill Farmer to me is an icon, not unlike many of the icons that he created. He worked in every medium, every genre, every material that's known to humankind, as far as I know. And he worked his own way. He loved other artists, and he encouraged them. And in Omaha, when he started, there were very few private galleries. There were some colleges didn't even have a gallery yet. And he and his people, one of whom was Leonard Thiessen, who was co-founder of the Nebraska Art Museum and the first director of the Nebraska Arts Council in Omaha. And they were so interested in young artists that they would go to high schools for art shows just to tell them, come on, keep it up, do it, you know. And I consider Bill Farmer one of the great artists of the 20th century. And I have enough people that agree with me that I don't even have to doubt it anymore. And his output is enormous. I mean, I can't even judge how many pieces he did in the almost 70 years of his active art career.
Amazing. Well, there's so much to, you know, my head is spinning right now. As a listener of KXCBK on W, I invite our audience to think about all the opportunities in Brownville, Nebraska. Jan, there's another museum coming in, the Folk Art Museum, and you probably need some places to stay in Brownville. So kind of talk about another museum, but also places to stay, too.
Oh, you bet. Interestingly, talking about the allure of Brownville, George Newbert, who was the director of the Sheldon Art Gallery and director of the Museum of Fine Arts in San Antonio and several other out in California, retired and moved to Brownville. And he's an artist, and he's an art director and an art collector, and he's starting up the Flatwater Folk Art Museum that is really going to be a phenomenal place. It's in another, we do everything in churches there. Yet another church was moved in and turned into a museum. Our concert hall's a church. The Village Theater's a church. It's ubiquitous, but at any rate, that's what it is. And it is really going to be a phenomenal, he has a phenomenal collection. It's supposed to start up this fall. Mm-hmm. On the grounds of the museum is a Frank de Souvarou sculpture. He is an internationally renowned American expressionist sculptor who felt like Brownville should have one of his works. So he sent one to us. We have three other very famous sculptors have sent their work to us. One of them is actually on loan to the Falls City Arts Council and Library. So if you are hike and bike trail and go through our Arboretum there, which is a part of the statewide Arboretum organization, you really see a lot of interesting things there. You'd be surprised at what you see there in Brownville. And, of course, you have to have a place to stay. We have a wonderful bed and breakfast floating right on the Missouri River called the River Inn Resort that is absolutely charming. I mean, and it's posh. It's not rustic. We also have a number of bed and breakfasts that are in historic homes there as well. And if you go to our website, either the Concert Series website or Brownville NE website, it'll tell you everything, lodging, eateries, whatever's going on, all of our events.
Let's give those websites for our listeners.
Yeah, it's www.brownvilleconcertseries.com. And then it's www.brownville-ne.com, which is run by the MOB, our Merchants of Brownville organization, of whom Ron is president.
Well, that's a great tie back to Ron here. So, Ron, as you think ahead and some opportunities that the Whiskey Run Creek Winery has in front of it, you know, what kind of special events do you have during the year?
Usually during each, as the seasons change, we'll run a special during that day. A lot of times we'll run, stay open 10 to 10 during the day, run $10 wines, and then we usually try to have music during the evening. The next one we have coming up, it's going to be the 22nd of March, Saturday. We're going to have like a special during the day, and then Tim Javarsky, who's a saxophone player out of Lincoln, is going to be playing that evening from 7 to 9. And then during the summer, the last two summers, June and July, we've done music on Friday nights. We kind of filled in the other Fridays. The town always does something the first Friday of every month, and that's usually down on the River Inn Resort. This year, we're going to expand it through 4 months. We're going to start in May and run through August and see how it goes this year. And I think right now we've got all the dates filled up with performers.
And so, again, it's way beyond just the wine and the grapes, et cetera, but just I want to circle back to the making of wine, kind of put that in a capsule for our listeners about how the process there.
The process? Well, it'll start this time of the year. This is, we're out in the vineyard pruning right now. Well, getting ready to, as soon as it warms up a little bit. It needs to get about 32 degrees almost for my hands to function out in the vineyard pruning. The pruning's done, then we go through the whole season, spring and everything, and then we start harvest, usually about around from the middle of August to the middle of September. Or latter part of September. About 45 days we're actually harvesting. During harvest, we'll pick the grapes. They're all picked by hand. They're brought into the winery, stem crushed, pressed, turned into wine, and put into bottles. Okay. That's kind of a brief synopsis of what happens. But there's a little few things happening between there.
You had a two-day course. I got a two-minute course.
Plenty of crush course.
Yeah, you bet. Well, as Jan said, is the lead of the MOB. It's good to meet the leader of the MOB there over the Merchants of Business. That's just a great just so many good things going on in Brownville. And as you think about all of the visitors that come into the Brownville area, I just think about the sights and the sounds and the ability to have, as I said, the solitude piece of this, but then to enjoy company with so many others and crossing all of the arts and all of the offerings that you all have offered. And I'm just enthralled by Brownville. I've been there before. I'm committing to you to be back this summer. And I know my wife is probably listening to this program, but maybe I'll surprise her with maybe a trip over there or a couple trips and so on. But I invite our listeners to enjoy the sights, the sounds, the smells, the tastes of Brownville, Nebraska. Jan, Ron, and Tom, I mean, I just thank you for offering this, because I think sometimes when you live in an area, you don't know what's out there and what's very special to you. Jan, you actually mentioned the Arboretum, Nebraska State Arboretum, and you're part of that. We share that in common. We are the Missouri State Arboretum here on the campus of Northwest Missouri State University. Very proud, celebrating our 20th anniversary here in April at the Missouri State Arboretum. And many people come here and say, wow, I didn't realize that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, listeners in Brownville, Nebraska, not very far from your listening site, you can go over there and just take in so many sights, sounds, smells, tastes. And I invite you to do that throughout the summer. Anything to close, Jen?
I was just going to say, you know, this is a great place for kids. There's something for everything. Railroad Depot Museum, the Steamboat Trace Hike and Bike Trail. If you're just a nature lover and want a bird watch, we just had an eagle watching event there that was magnificent. You know, so there, it's like there's something for everybody, and you can do as much as you want or as little as you want.
Right. Beautiful.
To get away.
That's right. Tom, anything to add?
Well, I was going to say that much of the reason that I came to Brownville was because of what I call the grandparents of Brownville, who are Randall and Jane Smith. And they also have a bookstore, as well as the floating bread and breakfast. And it is through her that we are one of the three book villages in America, from associated with Hay on Wye in Wales. And she has a lovely, lovely book collection down in what is open when the restaurant that also shares the space is open.
Okay, thank you. And the leader of the mob, Ron, anything to add?
Just anybody's looking for a nice, quiet, relaxing weekend. There's still a lot of things going on in Brownville, and it's a nice, quiet atmosphere, and we invite you to come over.
You bet. Well, Jan Chisholm Wright, Ron Heskett, and Tom Rudloff, thank you very much for your time and being on All Things Northwest. I think I can safely say, on behalf of our listeners of KXCV, KRNW, and National Public Radio, that we will be joining you this spring, this summer, and this fall. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Northwest Missouri State University's Dean of Arts and Sciences, Dr. Mike Steiner, who will talk about arts and sciences, but also the importance of general education. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV KRNW.
Northwest Missouri State University offers many degrees in communications. Organizational communications major Brett Friedenberg chose Northwest for two reasons.
One is that I believe that it is the best place to prepare for my future. I know we have a great faculty here in the communication department, along with great students too. The Peking Bearcats just went to the national championship and won that. So that's a really good thing to be challenged by and just to continue to learn.
Friedenberg will graduate May 2016.
Support for All Things Northwest is provided in part by the Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments, which offers programming, products, and services to its member governments in Atchison, Holt, Gentry, Nottoway, and Worth counties. More at nwmorcog.org.
Many students who attend Northwest Missouri State come from states bordering Northwest Missouri. Alumna Laura Lacina is from Iowa. She chose Northwest because of low out-of-state tuition rates.
At least in Iowa, you pay less out-of-state tuition in Missouri than you do in-state tuition at a state school here in Iowa. And also, you know, you get a computer. The classes are small. It's such a great experience that I would never trade it for anything else.
Lucina graduated from Northwest Missouri State in 2007. She is currently an office assistant at Thrivent Financial in Johnston, Iowa.
Underwriting support for All Things Northwest is provided by Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service. More at nottoway.biz.
Welcome back to the March 2014 edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. We'll now visit with Dr. Michael Steiner, the Dean of College of Arts and Sciences at Northwest Missouri State University. Dr. Mike Steiner previously served as Professor of History and Chair of the Department of Humanities and Social Sciences. He received his Ph.D. in American Studies from St. Louis University in 1994, and then he came to Northwest Missouri State in 1997, with 10 years of teaching experience in public high schools, and he came here to teach and coordinate the Social Science Secondary Education Program. Mike has interests ranging from American photographic history to modern Japan. He has published articles in a variety of topics in these areas, as well as local photographic histories. Mike has an emphasis primarily in the 19th century America. He's taught a variety of courses. And ladies and gentlemen, he was just named the Dean of Arts and Sciences at Northwest Missouri State University and assumed that position in January. He not only oversees the College of Arts and Sciences, but also our study abroad program and the general education program. Mike, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Well, first of all, let's just get to the straight question, which is, what the heck is a dean and what are arts and sciences? Let's just start at the base level here.
Well, a dean is an administrator who coordinates the operations of an academic college from all aspects, from its facilities through its educational programming, dealing with faculty, student workers, all dimensions of the operations of an academic college.
And when you talk about the academic portion of student experience, as you talk about the history of higher education, you know, that starts and ends with general education and arts and sciences. And so, you know, in the promo of the program, you know, we talked about Dr. Mike Steiner coming on to All Things Northwest and talking about the importance of general education. So let's talk about Gen Ed for a little bit here. General education, how do we define general education?
Well, first of all, John, I'm really excited to be Dean of Arts and Sciences because I think we like to see ourselves as the foundation of the university in terms of its history and academic program and its foundation in general education. General education is the as I said, the academic foundation of the institution in terms of those areas of study and self-development in students that give them a broad understanding of the world. And that, in essence, is what general education is all about, developing a broad understanding of the world around ourselves, which defines us as an educated person.
And as we talk about a broad understanding of the world and really being that educated person, that whole educated person, you know, I think about the departments that report to you, Mike. And for our listeners' sake, you know, academic departments at a university report into a dean. You've got several academic departments that comprise arts and sciences. Kind of talk about those departments.
Well, the college is comprised of the departments of English and Modern Languages, which encompasses, in terms of general education, communication skills, especially in writing, and also opportunities at Northwest for students to develop an understanding of other languages. It includes the Department of Humanities and Social Sciences, which brings in the areas of history, political science, Western civilization, philosophy, many of those fields of study that, again, are foundational to higher education throughout its history. The college includes also the Department of Natural Sciences, which addresses both the physical and the biological sciences, so things like biology, chemistry, physics, geology. Those all fall within that area. The college also includes the Department of Fine and Performing Arts, so that would include the areas of music, art, and theater, which also then provides a broad range for students. And then mathematics, computer science, and information systems, so the fields of of mathematics, quantitative studies, computational skills. Information systems, of course, are important, always have been, to general education. What's changing rapidly is the mode of those information systems.
So I know our listeners of All Things Northwest and KXCV KRNW can relate to many, to most, to all of those topical, those subject areas, those departments. But as we talk about general education and you bring in a student recruit or a group of parents and talk about the importance of Northwest Missouri State and the general education program, you know, how do you talk about the why part of general education? Why general education? What is its purpose and why is it so important?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up because one of the things that I like to talk with students about is the importance of perception in terms of engaging themselves in general education. I have for many years had the opportunity to work with students at our summer orientation and registration program and also through our freshman seminar program. So I've done a lot of advising of first-time freshman students. I recognize their perceptions also from the perspective of having been a high school teacher. So I've enjoyed being able to see it from both ends of that transition.
And you're a parent, and so you have that.
And I'm a parent as well, so I have that perspective with sons that have very different interests than myself. But what I've discovered is that much of the challenge that those students face is a matter of perception in terms of the relevance and application of what it is they're going to do at a university. And sometimes it's a matter of getting really excited about this change, this transformation from being a high school kid to a college student. They come in, they look at their schedule, and it's got a lot of the same courses on it that they saw on their high school schedule. And they say, what's this? Thought I was going someplace different. So that provides an opportunity to have a conversation with those students about really, first of all, embracing those courses, finding the relevance in those courses in terms of their application to adult life. What do we do with these things as adults? Finding application in those courses relevant to their specific interests. So if they have a major degree program interest, how does that general education course apply to my interest in the fine arts or my interest in the sciences? Where are the connections? And then also to engage them in thinking about what skills are going to develop in those courses. The communication skills that are applicable to whatever they're going to do in written communication, oral communication, their higher order thinking skills that they're going to develop and how they'll apply those to problem solving in every dimension of their lives. Computational skills. A lot of students, you know, think, well, I'm not interested in mathematics. Why do I have to take a mathematics course? Gosh, I'll never use that stuff. And they realize, as we all have as adults, that those computational skills are embedded in our lives regardless of what we do.
So you used a couple of words there, Mike, talking with Dr. Mike Steiner, the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Northwest Missouri State University. Mike, you used the words relevance and application. And as I go out and travel around and talk about the academic package, the curriculum that is offered at a university level, you know, you talk about general education, and some of the naysayers would say, well, you know, I don't get the application, I don't get the relevance, you know, why should we devote X number of courses or X number of money, you know, X amount of money with regard to tuition and the spend thereof? Mm-hmm. Kind of talk about the relevance and application. How do we at Northwest Missouri State University bring about relevance and application within our various general education courses?
I think it starts with our freshman seminar program. I'm convinced that one of the most valuable things that we do with our incoming students and our transfer students who need that programming, that in the freshman seminar experience, which we just revised the curriculum to address this a little more fully, we communicate with students the importance of those skill areas that I mentioned and also some broad knowledge-base areas and interact with those students in terms of how they will apply those to all of their particular interests. This, in fact, is, we do it extremely well at Northwest Missouri State. It's not unusual in the sense that as a higher educational program with our peer institutions across the state, we've had conversations about what general education should involve. In fact, there's a statewide agreement of on goals and skills that should be addressed in general education in our peer institutions. For a couple of reasons, not the least of which is that generally we agree those are good practices. Those are what educational programs should do. So there's some consensus about what should be offered to a four-year student in a college education. I think we do it extremely well, and the various campuses address those skills, those goals, in a variety of ways, but they all address the same kind of thing, that no matter what you're going to do in life, there are educational opportunities that will enhance your understanding of the world around you. It makes you more functional, it makes you more effective, it makes you a good citizen. I sometimes even tell my freshmen that there's an indefinable happiness principle to being a well-educated person, that just knowing and having some understanding of what's going on around you in the world news, in finance, reduces stress. We find that in all aspects of our life, when we know better what's going to happen, our stress level goes down. And that applies to education as well. So I think there's just a certain degree of human satisfaction to being a broadly educated person.
What you call it, the undefinable...
The happiness principle.
Undefinable happiness principle. I've got to think about that. Kind of goes across many walks of life, I suspect. But, you know, one of my favorite comments or favorite stories, I guess I should say, would be from an alumnus from Northwest Missouri State University. And, Mike, this will tie into kind of what we're talking about on general education. I'll do it fairly brief here. But it's a gentleman who graduated from Northwest years and years ago, a couple decades ago, and he was a baseball player, kind of went into professional baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But he had gone through our general education program and went through our writing courses. And as he tells the story, he just, you know, kind of moaned about, why am I taking these writing courses? This is crazy. I don't want to write when I get out. You know, I'm going to go play baseball, right? And he just couldn't believe it. It was incredulous. Why am I doing this? So he gets out, gets hurt, of course, and doesn't pursue that baseball career. But he goes into scouting, baseball scouting. And he says, I was a terrible scout. I couldn't evaluate baseball players, but I could write better than the other scouts. And I kept getting promotions. He said, I couldn't figure out why I was getting promoted. I couldn't figure out who was throwing a better curveball or hitting a better, you know, fastball or something. And it dawned on him that all of his writing courses within his general education program laid the foundation. And it wasn't just his writing courses, by the way. He said in his other courses that he had to write, you know, many papers and compositions, he says, it laid the foundation for me to articulate what I was thinking, and I just did it better than anybody else. And, you know, honestly, he's still highly successful, still in the business, and he credits Northwest with his general education experience. And I think that's the kind of story that, as I talk to some of our students about it, resonates with them, because sometimes that application, that relevance don't come to that, you know, that top of mind, if you will.
Yeah, and general education is often, it's one of those things that you often gain a greater appreciation for the farther you progress through it as a student, and then even more so once you've left the institution, moved on to other things. Even those things, like in the example that you cited, that you don't think you will be using. The things we don't think we're going to use are our alternatives. They're the things that we have to go back to rely on, to draw in and use in contexts where we didn't think they were going to be there. And general education, I think, is so important because it develops those things that even when students in the moment don't have a clear recognition of what they're going to do with that, are gaining from it in ways that they'll discover later.
And we obviously tie it into the workforce experience. I know that Joni Schneider over in Career Services here on the campus of Northwest Missouri State University, she'll talk about, the Director of Career Services, she'll talk about the top 10 skills that employers are looking for out of their applicants. And those skills, Joan would say, have not really changed too much over the years. And, you know, as you look at those, there are a lot of soft-based skills. Employers can kind of teach, you know, what it is that they're doing. But those skills that are developed within general education, Joan would say, have not changed at all or very little in the last 10 to 15 years. And I was just reading a little study about Google and what Google is really seeking out of its job applicants. And that ability to to learn and learn quickly and adapt and be able to communicate that is really where it's at. And how you develop that throughout your general education program, I interpret here at Northwest, is really what we do.
It is. My foundation is in the humanities, and we tend in the humanities to have a conservative view in the sense that we look at principles in education and higher education that have persisted for not years or decades, but for centuries, those things that are continuous. And understanding that what often is changing is the medium through which we do those things. So when we talk about having technology competency, that's always been the case. When the printing press was invented, that was a technology to which people adapted. So the same skills, agility, if you will, that people have used for centuries are still required. One could even question whether or not the pace is actually changing all that much. We like to say that, you know, in this world today, change is faster and faster. As a historian, I'm not sure that's necessarily true. If you look at the pace of change over the last two centuries, people have lived through remarkable decades. I think what's changing more rapidly is perhaps the transformation of the media that we're using. So in electronic communications, for example, you know, you and I are already outdated in what we expect, and our kids are ahead of us in terms of communication. Right. But the ability to adapt to those changes and problem solve are those things that are foundational and have not changed that significantly over time. So when Joan talks about those things like communication skills, problem solving skills, valuing, ethical development, interpersonal skills, those are things that we've always needed. The context just changes.
Well, I love your example of the Gutenberg kind of printing press because, you know, as you think about it, pace probably was very, very rapid for that moment in time. So from a context point of view, probably not a whole lot different than today. Mike, I want to close. I know we're talking about the importance of general education and appreciate what you bring to the table as Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences and all the departments that are part of the general education program, and frankly, all the other departments that offer courses and programs here at Northwest. It's really, we're merging towards an interdisciplinary approach, which is to say for our listeners, cutting across disciplines, it's not just one discipline or another. So it isn't just about general education, but that certainly is foundational. I appreciate all your work with that. But I also wanted to mention to our listeners, one thing I didn't talk about in your intro piece was your work with the Nottoway County Historical Museum. Can you talk about that? Because it ties in so well to the concept of general education, but also from our listening point of view, something else to do as they think about winter, spring, summer activities.
Well, thank you for mentioning the Historical Society. I think it's a tremendous local resource that quite a few folks in our area are aware of, but certainly there's more opportunity. And the Historical Society, I think, is part of my interest in broad cultural understanding. I have a specific interest, of course, as a historian, and I like the stuff that's in the museum and to work with those things. But the Historical Society has, for me personally, provided a lot of opportunity to come to a broader understanding of the world just in terms of my own participation. I've been president of the Historical Society for several years now, and the range of things that I have the opportunity to do as president of the Nottoway County Historical Society have pulled on the broad range of my education. So there's no school for being a president of a historical society. There's no class in being a president of a historical society. There's not a book that I've found on being that. And so people ask me, well, you're president of the Historical Society, what do you do? And it's essentially whatever needs to be done when it comes up. The students in our public history program are sometimes amused when I start rattling off the things that I've done as president of the Historical Society, which includes things like working on plumbing and
sure, of course,
all range of things that has to be done. And just in terms of contributing to culture, I found a tremendous opportunity and localizing it. I think throughout my career as a historian, I've become more and more and more local in my interests because I like to share the abilities that I have in that area with folks that I live with in my community.
But what's real neat is, you know, your background, you know, spans from Japan to, you know, all the history mm-hmm. of society, if you will. And you, Mike, you talk about broad cultural understanding. And as I think about an educated person, and as we do commencement here at Northwest Missouri State University, one of my lines to the graduates to be is that, you know, young men and women, you are receiving a degree. No one can take that degree away from you, but it defines you as an educated person with broad cultural understanding. And I think as we look at general education and what you do in terms of leadership, that is important to society. And that's not to say anything else with regard to getting students through, getting them to be accessible to higher education, make sure it's affordable, make sure that we get them through on time and, you know, within reason. You know, that's all very, very important. Get them out in the workforce and get them placed, all critical. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is to develop young men and women to contribute to their societies and have that deep and broad cultural understanding so they can enjoy a lifetime full of opportunities that are endless and that lifelong learning.
And hopefully through our general education program, we're providing them not only with the ability but the aptitude to continue to develop that. You mentioned cultural understanding. Sometimes people think of cultural understanding in terms of experience. I have to go here, I have to go there, I have to meet these kinds of people. It's really more a matter of aptitude than experience, a way of thinking more broadly, thinking critically than you might have had you not been educated to do so.
Well, Mike Steiner, the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Northwest Missouri State University, thank you very much. Challenging our listeners, by the way, to really to think broad and to challenge yourself and be able to embrace so many experiences in front of us. Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Jan Chisholm Wright, Ron Heskett, and Tom Rudloff from Brownville, Nebraska, along with Northwest Missouri State University's Dr. Mike Steiner. Thanks, too, to our producer, Ben Nully, a student here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV station manager, Rodney Harris. Friends, take good care. Treat each other well. Provide good works for others. And keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Jasinski, and thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV-KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development and Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments. More on Facebook at facebook.com/NWMORCOG. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is written and produced by multimedia journalism major Ben Nully. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.